Well, hi, Paul. How you doing today?
Fine, Bill. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. And anyway, of course, we called to ask you about this lockout that's been going on since June 5th, I believe.
Yeah, we were locked out the evening of June 5th.
Yeah, how many weeks is that?
It should be around 13, I believe.
13.
I was looking at the calendar the other day. It seems like Labor Day was our 3-month anniversary, so we're about 13 weeks.
Wow, man, that's a long time. Well, anyway, how are you folks getting along financially?
It's been a struggle. We were 5 weeks, I guess we were 8 weeks into it before the governor and the IDS approved our unemployment benefits, and that kind of took the little bit of heat off. Right now, one of our biggest struggles is with benefits, with insurance.
Oh yes, of course. Have yours run out since the lockout, or was?
Yeah, the only option to us after the lockout was Cobra, and that wasn't financially affordable for any of us.
Oh yeah, that's probably about $400 or $500 per family.
I think it was about $1,500 a family.
Oh my God! Well, of course I'm on a different plan, but once in a while mine runs out. Boy, yeah, that would just about eat up all your unemployment right there.
Yeah, so there wasn't any, like I said, that was one thing I think had to go with everybody, and that was basically the insurance. All of us, very few of us have medical benefits now.
Okay, and have you been getting any support from other unions or organizations or individuals?
Support has been very good. We didn't really, it was probably our fault at first because we didn't really start getting out here and probably beating the bushes and letting the public know, you know, or the other organizations, and really let them know that we were locked out. Because I think in the back of our mind, we thought, you know, 2-3 weeks, you know, 4 weeks would be a lot, and we'd be back in there and they'd come back to the table. But since, since the middle of first week of July, I guess after 4th of July, we started talking and kind of spreading our trail, and we have had a lot of support from a lot of different locals across the state, and then it's starting to spread out.
Oh, okay. Well, how is it that, what techniques are you using to get the word out?
Well, AFL-CIO is helping us. The IFT-AFT, the teachers' unions, are helping us. They have a very good network.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And they have a very good network set up, and they have been real helpful they've been real helpful at doing their job teaching. They've come down and helped us out and told us and you know, that this is the different ways to work. We put together a video that we're now selling for like $3. It's a 12-minute video. We've got a web page, emails. I've sat down and went through like the AFL-CIO email addresses and started sending out to the internationals and different locals, trying to just let them know what's happening and to advise them and make them aware, and then also asking for support.
Have you been invited to any locals, say, to come and speak or present?
As we went up to the Peoria Trades and Labor Council and met with them, I believe we're setting up to go to Bloomington shortly to meet with the Trades and Labor Council up in Bloomington. As far as actually being invited, no, I think we kind of call up and ask, you know, if it's okay if we come up, and we've never been denied, so if somebody's interested, you know, or don't know, we'll, you know, if they get a hold of us, we'll be glad to make a trip and send them a video.
Yeah, I found that to be a pretty effective way to get support, to get out to other union locals. And I remember during the Staley lockout back in 94, mm-hmm. you know, back in that time, I showed a videotape made by Labor Vision of St. Louis.
Yep.
And that, I don't know, you know, what that did in terms of giving aid people to Decatur, but the people who saw it were very affected by it.
And the video we got to like a 12-minute video. It was put out with some of the same people that put together Labor Vision, and it kind of gives a at glance. You know, it wasn't near as dramatic as Staley, but the violence hasn't been here.
Yeah, you need good pepper gassing, I guess.
Yeah. So I'm not looking forward to the pepper gas to attract attention, but
Probably use tasers now.
Yeah, I hope not. I've seen them, but I hope we don't experience that. And so we have a video that, you know, it's really explains our situation, and it's so far we've been getting that out to anybody that wants it. We're going to mail it out. The AFL-CIO is going to mail it out next month, and we're sending it out too. So that helps get word to it.
Oh, yeah, and I also noticed, too, that Ann Feeney's on this video, and she did perform at your Labor Day rally that we should talk about.
Yeah, Ann Feeney came up here in Labor Day and done a great job. She also has a lot of contacts without the labor body across the United States. She's helping us spread the word. She told us she was going to go back to Pittsburgh and work on setting up a rally in Pittsburgh. It's hard to believe there's that many people out there with the contacts until you start looking for them.
Well, I'll tell you, Ann's been doing this for a long time. She's been doing it all over the country, and she definitely knows a lot of people. Margaret Blackshear, did she make it and address the rally?
Oh, our Labor Day rally was tremendous.
Oh, yeah?
We had Governor Blagojevich, Senator Durbin, Illinois Senators Deanna DiMuzio, and our Senator John Sullivan. We had Margaret Blackshear. She came down. Also, she came down to the rally and stayed all day long with the two Illinois Senators. We had it was tremendous. They did a great job. They brought a lot of attention to where we're at. And Margaret's been excellent as far as support.
Ah, oh, well, great. By the way, were any of those politicians Republicans?
No. They were invited. We invited all our senators, representatives throughout the state, and the federal senators, LaHood, Tenhouse, Shimkus. For some reason, the Republicans failed to show.
Yeah, I find that happens occasionally.
Well, down here we haven't had any support from our Republican politicians.
Okay.
They seem to not take an interest in the labor movement.
Well, I think they take an interest in getting rid of the labor movement.
I think that's right. I don't think I think we're kind of a fly in the ointment for them. And it rubs them the wrong way or something, but we haven't had any support from any of ours. Congressman and the Republican, we've talked to them all, and have had no phone calls, no letters, no nothing.
Yeah, well, they're probably much better acquainted with the Celanese lobbyists.
Well, that's what we figured. They told us that Congressman LaHood told us that he didn't get involved in labor issues, and one of our members, asked him, so how come you're on the other side of the labor issue then? And he didn't want to address that.
Yeah, I think he's thinking about running for governor.
Well, it was thought. I heard the last date that he changed his mind. He thought he'd do better in the federal. But at the time we were pressing this issue, he was still on the governor, running for governor. And we said, how can you not get involved in this if you're contemplating running for office and the governor, because this is your people, And he still informed us that he didn't get involved in labor issues.
Just capital issues.
Just capital issues.
Okay. Well, anyway, how well attended was this rally?
We have, this town is only about 1,200 total people.
Wow.
And our goal was to double the population of Meredosia for one day. And the newspaper reported between 600 and 700 people. And some of the visitors we had here that are, familiar with rallies of this size, a lot of them said that we had between 1,200 and 1,500 at the rally. So I know, I'm just guessing for sure. I'm guessing we had way over 1,000. And I heard somebody say they had an official count, and I don't know how you get official count the way the people mill around, but they said something like 1,260. But I'd say it was between 1,000 and 1,400.
Wow.
So we had a real good, great weather, great day. They said Ann Feeney put on a tremendous program. We had real good speakers. We had Hewitt Douglas with Ask Me. he's the president of Ask Me Locals out of Springfield. He come down, spoke. It was just a really tremendous day.
Wow, that's great. Well, anyway, yeah, besides that, where do you think a lot of the crowd was from? Obviously, they weren't all from Aridocia.
Oh, no. No, we had teamsters out of Springfield, teachers from everywhere. We had teachers from Quincy. We had a group from Chicago, and the problem here is I don't know who the group was because they called and asked for directions, and nobody got their name, but we had a group out of Chicago down here. I believe we've got them wrote down, but I haven't ciphered through that yet. But we had groups from everywhere. I mean, we had them from Southern Illinois. We had some coal miners from Southern Illinois. We had teachers from everywhere. We had a lot of locals just represent us from everywhere.
Yeah, and actually you had a little bit of competition because there's a lot of cities. Well, for example, Champaign, we do have a something we just restarted a few years ago, a Labor Day parade and celebration. And quite frankly, nobody in Champaign was aware of this. Like, for example, we at the Illinois Labor Hour, we didn't hear about this until maybe about a week before. So... you know, it would have been great if we could have got some buses or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of, I don't know if it's hastily put together, but when we started out putting our rally together, one of our members took it and he ran with it. Steve Floyd did an excellent job, and I really don't think at the time we started it was going to get as big as it did, because we didn't dream that we'd get Governor Blagojevich and Senator Durbin to show up and attend. And so we maybe didn't set our sights, you know, high enough. And then after we got started, we realized it was going to get big on us. And then it was like, how big is this going to get and how are we going to handle it? Because it was our first time as far as, you know, as doing something like this. And, you know, anytime you bring in 1,500, 2,000 people, you got to have some way to handle the crowd and, you know, parking and, whether it was porta potties, we fed them, so it was something that was a learning experience for us. This whole 3.5 months have been a learning experience for us. We've learned a lot. We've also learned we got a lot of friends out there in labor.
Well, that's good, and you definitely got more friends than the people that happen to hear about and show up. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about, you know, you were talking about you had to have things prepared for the people, such as porta-potties and so on and so forth, and let's say, you know, you might have got a lot of bad press if you had a lot of people peeing in front yards or something. And that kind of, in a roundabout way, brings me to the Special Response Corporation.
Oh, the Special Response Corporation, so that's something that there's one we learned about because we never knew, we really didn't know anything about them. Our company, we found their contingency plan that they were putting together in May. It was dated May 1st, and we were locked out on June 5th. And the Special Response Corporation, after we started studying them, this is a big outfit. I mean, the government contracts them in Iraq. And they brought them in here. They have basically invaded our town. They run up and down our streets with video cameras. They come into our neighborhoods, set at nighttime where our members live. We call the local sheriff and deputies, and it never seems to go anywhere.
Well, as a matter of fact, aren't some of them, at least some of them, working part-time?
Well, for first... 2 months, well, let's see, July and August, the county sheriff had leased out his deputies on off-duty and their squad cars. One of the deputies told on our members they charge $70 an hour, and they come out and they set about an eighth of a mile from our picket line, and their job was to watch us. They didn't care about traffic, moving violations, nothing. It was they told our membership, we don't care about that, our job's to watch you. And there was somebody there 5-6 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day, and all they did was watch us. And I mean, it's we've had some skirmishes, but nothing serious. I mean, for 150 people without a job and the stuff that's going on, we've been really, I've been really proud of our members.
Yeah, well, there's definitely been a history over that way. Gosh, I can't remember the name of the town now, but there was a, I think, a rather large riot having to do with a coal strike way back in the days. But anyway, yeah, this kind of reminds me of the situation back in the 90s during the Illinois labor war zone years with Decatur and Peoria. You know, because at one time or another, you had the lockout at Staley, you had strikes at Caterpillar, and you had strikes at Firestone.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, there was the lockout in Charleston.
Yep. Trail mill.
That's right.
Yep.
And there seemed to, it was really strange when you go to like these big rallies, and there were, it was like people were just aiming cameras back and forth at each other. And it turned out later on where there seemed to be some collaboration, at least on along intelligence lines with the Illinois State Police, especially around Peoria. So there's the state is generally there to help their capitalists.
It seems that way. Like I said, the state police, honestly, right now, I can say the state police have been very good. The state police have taken a real neutral atmosphere. You know, they don't take a side. They've been real neutral in it. They have been supportive when we ask questions. Now, they're not supporting us, but they're not, you know, if we have questions, they're not bashful about, you know, trying to tell us at least the right way, you know, don't go out here and do something stupid, you know. And state police have been very good. Now, we haven't been involved. You know, they haven't been brought in as far as, well, we haven't had any demonstrations or something that would bring them in a different, maybe a different attitude. We're dealing right now with just the, you know, the squads on patrol, the units that are out there on the road and talking to their officers. And the state police has been very, you know, very good as far as the handling it. We spent one day this week visiting with the governor's labor liaison, Esther Lopez. And she's, you know, was the one to know what the governor's office could do to help us, you know, as far as get us back to the job, get us back to work. So maybe a little bit, the state police might be a little calmer because in 93 our governor was a different political atmosphere.
Yes, I remember. Anyway, yeah, well, so I was checking out Special Response Corporation's website,
mm-hmm.
and they have this page with at least two, maybe three dozen letters, and I thought maybe they might provide some other types of security. But basically, everything I saw on there had to do with strikes or other types of labor disputes.
Yeah, they, according to some of the people we've been involved, talked to with the military, or with the, I guess with people who have history with this special response, they have actually been contracted by the United States government for security around, like, the, when the Republicans and Democrats get ready to nominate people.
Oh, the conventions.
The conventions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they've been involved in that. They've also been used for different government when, you know, like all the foreigners come in and doing their trade meetings, stuff like that.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like WTO,
yeah, GA. They've been used for, like, out, was it in Seattle, was it Washington here a couple years ago, or 3 years ago, it's been longer than that, probably 8 or 9 years ago.
Oh, the big WTO meeting in 1990.
Yeah.
With the big, yeah, that's these people, it's just amazing. I mean, just completely, of course, the capitalists have the money to hire them. I'm wondering right now if they might be operating in New Orleans also.
I would not be a bit surprised.
I know Blackwater's there.
You, like I said, I'm on their webpage now, and you know, they've got, like I said, their executive protection. You know, they've got a Homeland Security part where to provide a comprehensive, effective means to disseminate information regarding risk of terrorism. So they're tied in, and we have actually, some of our members have spoke with some of their security guards, the guards that come out. And they come out and have spoken a little bit. And they're mainly
military veterans, or they have to have a 3 or 4 year employment record with being a law enforcement. So they're all basically got some law enforcement or a military background, and they are some of them are pretty decent people that they spoke with, and some of them are just a little bit on the obnoxious side.
Well, yeah, but they look like they're all pretty big.
Yeah, they're, and that's what they look to there when you go to their homepage.
Yeah.
Their homepage is, that's what they look like. That's their blue uniform. They got a dark blue uniform, and they, in this area, I mean, they come in here and pretty much have, at one time I'd say we had 45 or 50 of these employees, these security guards in our plant, and running up and down the streets in our town, and I don't think there's 50 of them here now, but I'd say there's 20. So.
Well, anyway, we've just got a few minutes left here,
okay.
And one thing we definitely need to get in is all your contact information, your website, your email addresses, and so on and so forth.
You can view our webpage at www.boilermakers484.org. That has a lot of the information. You can read the lockout story on it. If you can download it, high speed usually helps download better. You've got we got a place there where if people want to donate online, they can donate online. You can email me at just Paul, P-A-U-L, mail.boilermakers484.org. And you can, we also have it in a place where you can email the site right there on that. Like I said, we're located in Maridosh, Illinois, right along the Illinois River. Our P.O. Box is, it's the Boilermakers 484, P.O. Box 258, Maridosha, Meredosia, Illinois, 62665.
And I'll also add that your phone number is 217-584-1916.
Yep.
And anyway, just real quickly, do you have any... can you see anything into the future, short-term, medium-term, long-term? Or
short-term, I don't know. I really honestly don't feel this company wants a contract. I think they had this, like I said, I think they spent a long time on their contingency plan. And I think they were prepared for this. I believe, truthfully, they wanted us to strike, take a strike vote, and then they would have replaced us and we wouldn't even have an argument.
Well, then you wouldn't have had unemployment either.
Because they'd have replaced us and we'd have been out in the cold. We refused. We asked for an extension, and they didn't grant it. They locked us out. Long-term, it's probably going to be dependent on if the company can starve us out and what happens to our members. You know, 150 people out here, wintertime's coming. As I know, our gas at the pump went up, and we know that natural gas is going up this winter. So they won't break us spiritually, but they may break us in the bank before they ever break us spiritually because of the fact that, you know, this is going to be so expensive to keep going.
Yeah, well, I did notice that on their website, all of their recent press releases, while they are doing this to drive down their costs, they are raising prices on everything that they offer.
Yep.
And I also was looking at their SEC annual report filing. And the top executives, I think I saw at least three of them getting over a $3 million bonus. And this one guy named, I think it's Winand or something.
Weedman.
David Weedman. Yeah, he, on top of his $900,000 salary, he got over $5 million bonus last year.
Yeah.
So
yeah, this is not a company that's hurting for money. I mean, yesterday we talked a little bit to the HR, I guess it wasn't much of a conversation, really. It's kind of an argument with our president. And the HR was trying to direct them back to, like, Northwestern and airlines. And our president said, you guys aren't an airline. He said, you're not a, you know, he says, quit trying to compare yourself to somebody that is, you know, financially insecure and having hard times. So you guys aren't. and they're not having hard times. This is a very profitable business. This is a very profitable company. And they basically just come in here to decide that they're going to adjust the cost of living in this area.
Yeah, that looks like they're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you have a link to a phone number for their ethics hotline.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, I'll go see what their ethics are. And basically, their ethics have, they don't want to discriminate on sex or race or anything, but they don't say anything else about how they treat their employees, and a lot of their ethics mainly have to do with financial dealings.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look on the internet and you Google them, you can kind of find they've had a labor dispute up in Canada, and they're a really non-union based company. Years ago, I was told that they had a paragraph on their front page of their web that said that I don't exactly know the exact words, but something like, we don't agree with the union environment, and that's not a necessity for us to do business, something in that area. But they took it off here before they bought us about 2 years ago.
Well, that's good for the stockholders if they see union-free
yeah.
environment.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I guess the best way to check you guys out is at lockout484.org. And I hope everybody had their pens and pencils out a few minutes ago, and I wish you a lot of luck, Paul.
Well, we sure thanks for calling, and like I said, we're not gonna give up. We're determined. There are a lot of hard-headed people down here, and we feel that we're right. We feel that we've been treated unjustly, and that this company's just got a mission to basically break 150 families. And if they can hire a scab out here for $12 an hour and no benefits, you know, they don't really care. It looks like me like what kind of production they're gonna get.
That's right, and a chemical plant is not, you know, a safe toy to play with.
Oh, no, we've got some volatile chemicals in there. There's a lot of stuff in there that you put the right components together and you can make a bomb. And people that are bringing in there right now to work are some very, well, very people that have been in the penal system and out, and they're just can't really get jobs anywhere else, and they're going in here now.
Well, I tell you, man, good luck to you and the community, because, you know, FEMA probably wouldn't be there to help if something bad happens.
Yeah, they might show up a couple weeks later, but they'd be here.
Anyway, Paul, this has been good talking to you. I wish I could talk to you under different circumstances. We'll be in touch, and maybe the next time we'll have something better to talk about.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, sir, and I sure hope next time we visit we'll be better. So. Thank you.
All righty.